Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Teeing It Up from the Swamps of Jersey. This is Teeing It Up with Jeremy Schilling for a Monday, November 23rd, the year 2015. Luke, it's not 2014, it's 2015. What am I doing? And this Thanksgiving cold Monday, 36 degrees, we go down to a very warm Florida. How warm is it right now at Stetson?
Actually, you know what? It was about 65 degrees today, and it's always funny to hear the news reports saying, make sure not to send your kids to school today without their winter hats and gloves. I saw a construction worker with one of those ski masks on as he was outside working today. 65. I thought it was a beautiful day.
People are crazy. Florida life is crazy. Luke, I was kind of sad today, and Luke's on the preview Thanksgiving football, obviously, which we can't talk about on the Sunday sprint because it happens on Thursday. Luke, I got sad because Brock Osweiler was going to start on Sunday. We'll obviously talk about that game a ton on Sunday, but this is probably the end of the Manning-Brady ball.
Yeah, very well could be. And then you hear the report last night that Manning's, you know, planning to play next year, whether that's in Denver or somewhere else. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But Osweiler played pretty well. He went into Chicago and beat a Bears team that's been playing better football of late. And I think to certainly deserve to play this Sunday, where he'll have an even bigger test having to go up against someone like Tom Brady on the other side.
You know, here we are. And it is November. It's the day after the end of the PGA Tour season, which means I have to talk golf for like 15 seconds. Did you actually watch any of the RSM Classic final round yesterday?
I did not. Not on NFL Sunday.
Okay. So I have to tell you, for 15 seconds, I am obligated by the laws that I set forth myself for this show, that Kevin Kisner got off the snide, and after ending up in three playoffs and losing them, he went 0-3 in playoffs this year, Luke. Kevin Kisner runs away and wins the RSM Classic. Good for him. He said, Luke, that the party that would take place last night, he's 31 years old, could be epic. So it sounds like there was a wild at Sea Island, Georgia.
Yeah, and it sounds like it's well-deserved after three playoff losses. That's got to be tough to swallow.
Yes. All right. Philly, Detroit. We have a reeling Philly team with a lot of people think Chip Kelly's off to USC.
Yeah, and you know, that would be, in my opinion, a bad look for Chip after giving the reins of his team just a few months ago here in the offseason, getting rid of a lot of guys, bringing in guys, getting the Eagles the way he wanted that roster shaped, and now they go out and perform the way they have this season. And so for him, if he were to jump ship, and of course it's hypothetical at this point, but I think that would be a real bad move, similar to something like Bobby Petrino in Atlanta. Even if they were to fire him after just 1 year, I think that may be too soon. But, you know, the Eagles are a struggling team. The Lions certainly not having the year they would like, although they have won back-to-back games. So a matchup that heading into the season looks like a great one here on Thanksgiving now features two really underachieving teams that I guess could both use a win. But to me, I mean, the Eagles, of course, still alive in that terrible NFC East. But to me, neither of these teams ones to worry about when it comes to the postseason this year.
We'll skip the Cowboys for a second. Chicago, Green Bay, Luke, I'm sorry that we have to talk about this because I know the wound is still open. But here's the truth. You guys got outplayed yesterday by a Packer team that was pissed off, and you probably got them at the wrong time, to be honest.
Yeah, and I kind of alluded to that on our show yesterday. I mean, the Packers' three-game losing streak, the Vikings' five-game winning streak, a rivalry, a big game for Green Bay. I don't think it's too surprising that they came out and played well. They're still a good enough team to go out and win football games and make the postseason. From the Vikings' standpoint, I think the game was most frustrating, and then they just continued to shoot themselves in the foot. They're the least penalized team in the league, and yet they had eight flags thrown on them in the first half alone yesterday that almost helped the Packers score all of their points. So, you know, when the spotlight gets big on Minnesota, it's been the franchise's reputation to fold, and that's exactly what happened yesterday. But for the Packers, a big win to snap that losing streak and now retie themselves with the Vikings, where both teams control their own destiny because they're going to play each other in Week 17.
And now we move on to the dynamite game of the day, Dallas, Carolina. Carolina is still doing this. They get to 10-0 yesterday. They do it in really dominating fashion. And lo and behold, here we are with Dallas. Tony Romo gets the win. Can they do it? Can they run the table here, get six more wins, win out, get six more wins, and make the playoffs at 9-7 or maybe even 8-8?
Yeah, you know, I don't think they can. I think they can. I don't think they will. But I will say I like the Cowboys this Thursday at home on Thanksgiving. You have the Panthers coming off the high of a huge win. They're on a short week, undefeated, maybe time for a letdown. And meanwhile, you have Dallas where, despite Tony Romo not having his best game in his return yesterday, it was a victory, and a win can change a lot of things. And then you throw in the fact that it's on Thanksgiving, it's at home. Cowboys usually play well on Turkey Day. You know the fans are going to be fired up. Dallas, with the season on the line, is going to be geared up to play spoiler against Carolina while keeping their own playoff hopes alive. So I think Dallas will play well Thursday, and I think I may even pick the Cowboys to win this game and finally end the undefeated season for the Carolina Panthers.
It's interesting. Dallas is used to this. Dallas is used to this. Carolina, these teams that pop in on Thanksgiving, you know, in this kind of rotation every once in a while, they're not used to this. Do you give Dallas an advantage because they do this year after year after year?
I would give them an advantage, at least in playing the short week and here on Thanksgiving and everything. You know, Carolina has been a pretty good team of late, but you have a first-time head coach, a young quarterback, and I don't want to be an old stick in the mud, but maybe they're getting a little too big for their britches with, you know, these videos coming out of Ron Rivera celebrating with the players and the team itself kind of mocking the whole Cam Newton situation. They're feeling good, and they should because they're undefeated. But I think sooner or later, they're going to get surprised and upended, and that very well could be Thursday against a little bit of a maybe more experienced and older Cowboys team.
I think Dallas wins this game, and I think we start to see a lead up to the Jet Dallas matchup Week 15 on a Saturday night. Jets, who are probably going to be out of it by then, could play spoiler.
you don't sound too optimistic.
No, what do I have positive to go off of? We cut our star draft pick from 3 years ago today, Quentin Coples, because he sucks. What do I have to go off of?
Hey, they're still in the hunt. They got some help from some other teams in the AFC. They're right in the thick of things.
Here's the truth, Luke. In all seriousness, yes, but they can't run the football. Ryan Fitzpatrick's got to take snaps out of the shotgun. Rich Gannon was fantastic on this on CBS yesterday. Has to take shots out of the shotgun. Sorry, snaps out of the shotgun because it was dumb. Chris Ivory is not healthy. They got some momentum with Bilal Powell, and then Fitz throws an interception twice. Well, you know, last couple of games when they had the opportunity to take the win, whether it's play calling, whether it's game management, it's been little things here or there that have cropped up. And you're not going to win that way. They're going to need the balls to bounce their way. They haven't had that going. Darrell Revis was horrible yesterday. Now he's hurt. They're banged up. I don't have much faith.
Well, you know, they say character is built through adversity or something like that. And Todd Bowles, the first-year head coach, will be interesting to see how he handles this situation after the great start, now a losing streak, panic setting in amongst at least fans and media in New York and New Jersey. So it'd be interesting to see how Bowles handles this situation here where he really has to turn the team around and get them going in the right direction and keep them from giving in.
Luke going philosophical on us today. All right, you got 20 seconds. Plug your broadcast there.
What was that?
Plug your broadcast, 20 seconds.
Clock or somewhere around there. It's the second part of a doubleheader, and it's the Stetson Hatters with their first home game of the season against Fort Valley State tonight. The pregame show begins somewhere around 7:30 or 8 on AM 1230, AM 1490 WSBB. You can listen online on the mobile app, on your terrestrial radio. You can find it, and hopefully Stetson will get the first win of the year.
Luke Morrow, we'll see you Sunday. Thank you very much for coming on and teeing it up.
My pleasure. I look forward to it.
It's our pleasure to welcome to teeing it up our friend, InsideHockey.com Rangers reporter, Mr. Seth Rothman, the guy whose second home is on the Chase Bridge. Hello.
Hey, Jimmy. What's going on, buddy?
You like that description of you? Your second home is on the Chase Bridge?
Well, you know, early in this season, it certainly felt that way. There've been a lot of home games. I've covered a lot of games already this season. So, yeah, I think it's fair to say.
Let's start with what was your second home for a while, which is the TD Bank Sports Center. This Quinnipiac hockey team has no losses. They've now got two ties after the two ties this weekend. I almost said two halves. You know, golf's just too much in my head. two ties, one of which was a nothing-nothing scoreless tie, which featured one of the best saves you ever seen, ended up on SportsCenter. But this is a team that once again has itself in play, not only for number one in the country, but for a national championship. What has Rand Pecknell done right this year?
Well, he's gotten a lot of really good players. You know, it all starts with a good team, and this is a really good team. There's a ton of high-end skill on this team. The back line is really good. The defense is really good. They activate and play offense. I have not been able to watch a full game yet this season, but I've watched parts of games, and they're a very, very deep and impressive team.
You were on the other night having an interesting competition between QU Hockey and their streak and the Rangers and their streak. Which streak is more impressive?
That's a good question. You know, I think going undefeated in 13 straight games is pretty neat. Obviously, the Rangers went, 13 games undefeated as well. So that they're both pretty good. They both had a pretty good stretch of games. Obviously doing it in the NHL, I think, is a little bit different. Quinnipiac did not have the competition for many of those games. You know, they played a UConn team where they had shot them like 4-20. You know, that doesn't happen regularly in the NHL. So I think doing it in the NHL is more impressive, but both are certainly pretty amazing.
The Rangers are 15-3-2. They have 32 points. The Montreal Canadiens are 16-4-2 and have 34 points. What does that say about the start for Montreal, that the Rangers are second in their own conference?
Yeah, they've been pretty good, and they lost Carey Price for a while, and they didn't miss a beat. So that was, I think, the most impressive part of it, was that even without their best player, they were still able to do that. I'm not sure the Rangers would have been able to do this without Henrik Lundqvist, who has been a visitor trophy goaltender so far this season. So, you know, I think what Montreal did is they kind of proved to the rest of the league, we can win without Carey Price, and that's a very dangerous thing because a lot of people thought that they were being held up by their goaltender, whereas they kind of proved that they're not being held up by their goaltender at all.
This is a Ranger team that, as Hun and Humpty were talking about on 98.7 ESPN New York the other day, is a part of one of the great runs in this city, which some people would say is being overshadowed, maybe because they haven't won a championship, maybe because this is hockey. But the consistency and the high level of play over the last couple of years has certainly made it distinctive. What about this year's team? Why did that streak happen? What about this team has allowed them to go, with only one loss in their last 10 games?
Well, it all starts and ends with the goaltender. Henrik Lundqvist, as I said, is having just an unbelievable start. He is making some saves and playing in a way that I don't remember seeing him play for such a long stretch of time. Matt Zuccarello, who had that scary head injury last year, small fracture in his skull, concussion, the whole thing, and he's come back, and he's been one of the best players in the NHL so far this season. They still have not gotten enough contributions from Nash. They haven't gotten enough out of Chris Kreider. Their defense has struggled. Dan Girardi has struggled. Ryan McDonough has struggled. Dan Boyle has struggled. Keith Yandel has been up and down. And yet, here they are, a team where some of the stats indicate that they should not be as good as they are. you wonder if they're going to regress at some point. But for right now, you know, it's been good to them right now. The question is, can they keep this up? And if they can't keep this up, will they start to fall down a little bit? Some of the advanced metrics say that they will. The question is, will they start to find their game? This has always been, over the last few years, a second-half team. So if the Rangers get through the next 10, 15 games okay, and then they start to elevate their game, maybe they don't regress because they start the upward tilt. So that's going to be something very interesting to watch for.
How much do you trust advanced metric? Because this is interesting, because you're somebody who's watched probably every second of every game. You've seen why the team has won these games, whether it's luck, whether it's skill, whether it's, you know, a good bounce here or there. Have the advanced metrics lined up with what you've seen with your own eyes?
No, not at all. The Rangers have been outpossessed. There's an advanced metric called PDO. And what PDO does is it adds up your save percentage and your shot percentage. A luck-neutral team is at about 100. That means that there's not much luck that's involved with what you're doing right now. A luck-neutral team with an elite goaltender is probably up to 102, maybe 103. Well, the Rangers have been ridiculous at even strength this season. Their save percentage, their on-ice save percentage has been 96.1. which is insane, and their shot percentage has been 10.9, which means their PDO right now is 107.0. Now, as I said, a luck-neutral team is 102 with an elite goaltender, so the Rangers right now have been an extremely lucky team, and there's another message, advanced metric that says that a team with a good possession normally wins games and normally advances deep into the playoffs. The Rangers have the second worst possession number in the NHL right now. So to have the second worst possession and the second best record in the Eastern Conference, something doesn't match up there. Again, there's a lot of luck involved, and I think that luck is why a lot of people think the Rangers are going to regress at some point. Obviously, they have not yet.
Talking to Seth Rothman about the Rangers' hot start. Seth, what's been your verdict on three-on-three overtime hockey so far?
I love it, Jeremy. I really do. The NHL just set that a stat this morning. 20.8% of their games have gone past regulation. 64 games, 44 of them have been decided in three-on-three overtime, which is 68.8%. Last year, 44.4% of games were decided in overtime. 20 games have had a shootout this season, down from 46 games last year. So they have significantly shrunk the amount of shootouts, which is good for hockey. And 3-on-3 overtime has been a ton of fun as well. So you've got that going forward as well. I think it's been a rousing success so far.
One of the things we talked about when you came on in the preseason was the impact of penalties, and penalties changing things, and it eventually ends up being 4-on-4, blah, blah, blah. How have you seen that actually happen?
Yeah, it's happened a little bit. It has not happened as much as I thought. I think last game the Rangers played in Florida, they were playing 3-on-3, and the Rangers got an odd man rush, and Florida actually put an extra player on the ice to try and even up the odd man rush and took a penalty for it, a too many men penalty. The Rangers went and scored on that power play to win the game. So teams might try to do that, might try to live to fight another day, don't allow the 2-on-1, take the penalty, allow the team a 4-on-3 power play and try to kill it that way. That's the first time I've seen that. I'm interested to see whether other teams try to do that and what the league tries to do to combat it.
Interesting. We'll see how that plays out as things go forward. So what was this announcement I saw about the All-Star Game? They're ripping up the All-Star Game format once again to get more 3-on-3?
Yeah, so the All-Star Game. game has become a joke. Guys play at 25%. There's no defense. So what they're going to do this year is they're going to have three games. They're going to have a tournament of 3-on-3. The Atlantic Division is going to face the Metropolitan Division, and the two Western Conference divisions, the Central and the Pacific, are going to face off as well. Each is going to face off in a 20-minute game of 3-on-3. The winner will play in the third period. The winner will play a 3-on-3 game of 20 minutes, and the team that wins that 3-on-3 tournament will split $1 million. So there's incentive now for players to play hard because they're going to want, you know, I think each player on a winning team is going to get about $90,000. So there's incentive for these guys to play well now.
You like it? You think this will actually pan out, or will guys who are nicked up say adios?
It's going to be, I think, hard on the players because 3-on-3 is very demanding. But listen, it's worth trying something. The All-Star game is a joke right now. It has not been entertaining for a long time now. It sounds like the NHL might be making the All-Star game. Excuse me, might be making the All-Star game a once every 2 years thing, because they're only going to want, you know, next year they've got the World Cup of Hockey, so they're not going to do an All-Star game. 2 years from now they're going to have the Olympics. They're not going to want to do an All-Star game. So it's going to happen once every other season now. Listen, it's worth trying something. It's been awful for a while now. Maybe this injects some life into it. It's worth trying.
Now, I saw something. I was scrolling through that the NHL and the NHLPA made a trade, and one side got something in exchange for this.
Yeah, so what they've agreed to is each team next season, I think it's between December and February, maybe it's between January and February, actually, each team is going to get a 5-day break next season. There's not going to be an All-Star break next year, I don't believe, because of the World Cup of Hockey. So each team is going to get a 5-day break next season. No practices, no games for 5 days, and a chance to get away and regroup a bit before the stretch run. And that was something that the NHLPA wanted in exchange for changing the All-Star game.
How do you think that'll play out in real life?
Well, it'll be pretty similar to an All-Star break, except it'll be, you know, two or three teams getting it at a time. Listen, if it helps the players recharge, it's not going to cost much in the way of compacting the schedule. You know, the Rangers have had a 5-day break, I think, twice this season. So it's not going to do much in the way of compacting the schedule. You just won't have those 5-day breaks anymore, or that will become a 5-day break. So, you know, I think, again, one of those things, wait and see. I don't think it's going to have a major impact on the ice, but if it helps the players, then it helps the players.
Talking with Seth Rothman here. All right, let's take a step back now. You've had time to digest 3-on-3, time to digest fewer shootouts, time to digest the World Cup of Hockey. How do you think things will play out? Because one of the things golf is fighting next year with golf back in the Olympics is that the schedule is compacted. And guys are going to be playing tournaments that they've never played before, and guys are going to have to skip tournaments that they would never think of skipping before just because of how crazy the schedule is, and they will need the required rest. How do you think the hockey landscape is going forward? Because 3-on-3 is a more intense form of overtime hockey. Obviously, it's short. It's a 5-minute burst. These guys who are going to play the World Cup are going to you know, be tired, and I'm sure there could be some rule changes to help those games and help kind of keep the health going. How do you think this whole landscape will play out in 2016?
Well, I think the World Cup of Hockey is going to be interesting. You know, the big issue with it right now is I think a lot of people think it's a joke, and I think a lot of people think that way because you have six national federations.
Right.
And then you have a Young Stars team and a team and basically an All-Star team from other European countries that did not make it. Now, the reason they have those two teams this time around, they did not have enough time to hold a qualifying tournament. And so because had to create these other two teams. 4-5 years from now, when they hold the second World Cup of hockey, they will have a chance to do that qualifying tournament, and so you're not going to have the young stars and the all-Europe team. You're going to have 8 actual federations, and that's something I think a lot of people don't realize, that the young stars and the Europe team is not a long-term solution. Listen, it's great to have hockey in September. I'm not sure, you know, you look at the World Baseball Classic, and I think that's sort of where the NHL tried to go with this. My issue with it is guys are not ready to compete in September, and I wonder what the competition is going to look like with it being in September. Obviously, June is a tough time to do it. There's really no good time to do it unless you stop the season and do it in February, which the NHL doesn't really want to do. So we'll see. The jury's still out. I'm interested, but I'm not sold yet.
And I'm not sure how you feel about the World Baseball Classic, but I find it extremely useless. I don't think it's accomplished what it set out to accomplish, and I think it causes more problems than it solves for major leaguers.
Yeah, I have not gotten into the World Baseball Classic for whatever reason. I just haven't been interested in it. Listen, a guy getting injured playing for his country, to me, does not bother me. Playing for your country is way more important than playing for your club team, as far as I'm concerned. Even if it is a made-up, made-for-money event like the World Cup of Hockey or the World Baseball Classic. So I don't have a problem with guys getting injured. That doesn't bother me. It's just the quality of play bothers me. The World Baseball Classic, it's just March is not the right time to have an event like that. There's really no good time to do it, unless you were to do it in October, which is obviously tough for a number of, you know, reasons. There's just no good time to hold one of those events unless you do it in the middle of the season, and the NHL and Major League Baseball, for obvious reasons, don't really want to do it that way.
You know, it's interesting. As we've been talking, Neil Best of Newsday just posted an article about the college hockey boom at the Garden, obviously. QU will be there on January 6th or 8th. I forget what the day is. It's January 8th. January 9th. I got my calendar day screwed up. And what's interesting, Seth, is that I'm not sure if the transformation of the Garden, and obviously you were there through all the different stages, brought back the mystique, or just people saw it as a money-making opportunity. But Billy Joel's had about 40,000 consecutive shows there. The Liberty successfully made it deep into the playoffs. The Knicks have gotten off to a sensational start. The Rangers have been a perennial playoff contender in recent years. Traffic at the Garden seems to be going up, which is only a good thing for everybody involved in that. And I think it shows... And you know, maybe the Rangers' success did put the Garden not back on the map, but maybe it kind of reminded people of the fact that good things can happen in the Garden after being the house of negativity for a while.
Well, I think, you know, it's funny with the Garden, because anytime the Rangers have a weekend home game, they could almost never have a morning skate there. It's almost always at their training center, because there's almost always something, whether it's college basketball or the Knicks, there's always something going on at noon before their 7:30 game or 7 o'clock game. So it's very kind of funny to have a weekend game, and I get to the building at 4 o'clock, and they're still getting the insulation up and revealing the ice, and the glass is going up, the netting behind the nets is going up. So it's very interesting. I get a very cool experience of getting to watch them kind of put the rink together, and it seems to happen almost every week. And those guys have a very difficult job in terms of transforming the building every night from hockey to basketball to a concert. It's not easy. I will say, as a Quinnipiac alum, I am very excited for the game in January there. I'm very much looking forward to that game.
And I'll tell you something funny, Seth. I was, before the U2 show there over the summer, I was looking for the bag where prohibited items list for how big a how big a bag you could bring in. And the page I ended up on says, by the way, in rare instances, the Garden hosts both a basketball and hockey game on the same day. I'm like, that's a little bit out of date.
Yeah, it happens pretty frequently now.
Yeah.
It definitely does.
Seth Rossman, InsideHockey.com, the man who loves his hockey, digests it all, and then comes on the show to explain it to me. We thank you, sir. Happy holidays from everybody here and from Hess.
Jeremy, happy Thanksgiving to you too, pal, and we will talk soon.
Yes, we will. That's Seth Rossman, and we'll be back.
And that's all for teeing it up. We'll see you Sunday for the Sunday Sprint.